Man, I really wish I had the time to play that out all the way, because I felt like it was kind of crescendoing to something, and then it was going to calm down before the end of the song. There's still like 3 minutes left, but that's how much time I have left, and I have to get out of here. That was Ariel Calma with Manège. I sound so stupid. Can I say that about myself? When I speak French, sorry, I don't know it. We had Dylan Moon before that with Fortuna, which I know, it said it reminded me of something, and then Sheila B came on the comments board and said Human Nature for Michael Jackson, and that is completely what I was thinking of. I had that on an iPod some time ago and would just like drive around the mall with my sisters, and like for some reason we were driving in the parking lot of a mall in a boring town, and just like listening to that a lot, and oh my god, yeah, that's definitely what it was. I was gonna play it, and then I was like, do I play Michael Jackson now? Like, I feel so conflicted. I don't know what to do with that. I just was such a Michael Jackson stan and a Jackson 5 stan, and now I'm like, ugh, I don't know if I can fully listen to it anymore. It's just not the same as it was. We had Serpente in there, but I think I already said that. Ritos de Poeria? Ugh, now I feel all awkward about Michael. It's just, you know, I can't even go there. WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in New York City and Rockland County at 91.9 FM and online at WFMU.org. Mark Hurst is coming on soon. And I'll be here next week. Bye!
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Tectonic. My name is Mark Hurst. I will be your host for the next hour here on WFMU, Freeform Station of the Nation, Freeform Place of Cyberspace. I don't know if I'm going to keep that. Let me know if you like that. I know, it's a little silly. I'm really happy to be with you here this evening. I am live from Studio T in the former athletic gear closet here on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. You may have heard that WFMU is in our second COVID lockdown, so a bunch of us are broadcasting from home, just like the old days from the original COVID lockdown. And of course, I would prefer to be in the studio broadcasting from the big board as usual, but I of course understand why we're doing this, and I support that. And I want to give a big shout out and thank you to Alan, who is board hopping there in downtown Jersey City. Thank you for helping as part of the Skeleton Crew. Are we calling it the Skeleton Crew? I actually don't know. But anyway, thanks for helping out, Alan. And thank all of you for joining, whether you're listening over the FM band or over the live stream, or perhaps in the future on a on an archive version or podcast version, both of which you can get from WFMU.org or tectonic.fm, T-E-C-H-tonic.fm. I'm really happy to give you this show this evening because it is a show that I have been meaning to do for some time, actually, probably a couple of years. This is a show, most of it after my intro. I have something not topical to the theme that I need to say, but the main theme is about data brokers, and that has been an area of concern for years now. This show is coming up on 5 years old in September, and I, for the majority of this show's run, the majority of Tectonic, I have been concerned with data brokers, what they are doing to your data. And I have not had a chance to cover it on a show. And then John Oliver ran a show 8 days ago about data brokers. You may know that John Oliver, he used to be on The Daily Show. I think he was a stand-up comedian before that. Then he was on The Daily Show, and then he got his own show on HBO called Last Week Tonight. And I don't have HBO, so I don't really watch it, except once in a while, Oliver does a tech-themed show. And over the last couple of years, he's done a couple of these, and I have been impressed with the work that he and his staff do in putting together really accurate and well-turned messages, I guess, about what the big tech companies and their vassal partners are doing to all of us. And this evening, not just the big tech companies and the data brokers, but the government, and not just one government. We're going to get into it. Everyone is participating in the surveillance capitalist economy. And I thought John Oliver did a good job of going, I mean, in I think about 25 minutes, he gave a good overview of the situation. I want to say, I want to touch on what he told you, and then I want to broaden it because I think, and this is not a criticism of Oliver's show, but I do think there is a larger problem that data brokers fit into, and we're going to dig into that in this hour coming up. So stay tuned for that. First, I want to say something, as I mentioned, that's not topical to data brokers, and that has to do with what's happening on Twitter with Elon Musk. I'm not going to go into a bunch of detail, but you may have seen the headlines. Elon Musk, depending on the day, he's either the richest or the second richest man. I think he's been the richest man in the world for some number of months now. Anyway, one of the wealthiest people in human history has decided to make his new spectacle. He's always inserting himself into the news with one spectacle after another, and which seems to work well in this media environment. And he has made it his current hobby horse that he wants to buy Twitter. At first, he seems like he made a feint and said, oh, I'm just going to buy enough of it to put myself on the board, and then I'll agree not to buy more than that. And then he said, no, I'm not going to be on the board. Now I'm going to buy the whole thing. You can never tell where he's headed, and that's part of, I think, part of the appeal for his media coverage is that he's unpredictable and in a way spectacular, not in a good way, but in the sense that he creates spectacle wherever he goes. Well, that got me thinking about Twitter, and because I, as I have told you, friends, over the years, I've forgotten Facebook, and I have what did we do last year with the sign off? Incinerate Instagram. I forget what the I was. Anyway, I've been off all of the Zuckerbergian toxic cesspools for years now. But I don't use TikTok or Snapchat or any of those. But I did make an exception for Twitter, and I spent a fair amount of time on Twitter because it allowed me to invite certain guests onto this show, and it allowed me, frankly, to learn about certain potential guests for the show. It was really helpful in certain instances, in a way that, you know, sending an email through an agent wouldn't always have gotten me the access. And I learned about certain news stories that have been helpful. So Twitter, leaving aside the enormous downsides and enormous list of problems that Twitter has caused in this country and around the world, I felt like there were some narrow benefits to the show and I was going to stay on. Well, Elon Musk said, I think I might like to buy the company. And again, you don't know if you can take it seriously, but it just seems like a very unstable situation over there. And look, here's the problem. If Elon Musk buys it, can you imagine what Twitter might turn into with Elon Musk removing all sorts of controls and unleashing his army of superfans onto the world through Twitter accounts? It would just be, to the extent that Twitter right now is a cage match between extremist ideologies, that's like who can shout the loudest, it would just be even worse. So that's not a great outcome. And there were a lot of people on Twitter who were bemoaning the possibility of Musk taking it over. On the other hand, what if Musk does not take it over? What are we already looking at on Twitter is just a crazy town, inhuman set of algorithms and shady opaque decision making about accounts. And I don't want to get too deep into this because I could do a whole show on the problems with Twitter's moderation and how it has distorted the media environment such that people like Elon Musk, and in fact, as I said a lot a couple of years ago, the previous occupant of the White House made very profitable use of Twitter until he was kicked off. It's turned the whole world into a shouting match, and whoever can create the most gross and perverse spectacle of himself gets to be, you know, the richest person in the world or the president of the United States. And that has horrible distorting effects on democracies all over the world, not to mention civil discourse and everything else. All of this is to say that I have Elon Musk to thank for bringing me to a kind of a decision point, making me think, what happens if he buys it? What happens if he doesn't buy it? Why am I still spending time on this site? Now, I'm not here to announce that I've deleted my account, but I have posted a kind of a sign-off for now, and I want to give it some time, not on Twitter for a while, and see how it goes. I have a number of books in the pipeline that I already have here at home to read or are on their way, and so the pipeline of upcoming guests is there's no problem there. I have plenty to talk about, plenty to read and learn and share with you, friends. So I'm going to take this time now that the pipeline is full of books that I've got to get through and see how it is not being connected several times a day to the toxic cesspool that is Twitter, whether or not Elon Musk buys it. I just don't have any faith in that company. Not that I ever did, but I certainly don't right now. So that is Elon Musk. And if you want to read more, there's an interesting piece in The Atlantic from April 14, so just 4 days ago, by Rene DiResta, who's written a bunch and researched a bunch on social networks and misinformation. And there's a piece called Elon Musk is Fighting for Attention, Not Free Speech. And DiResta writes, Twitter serves less as a town square than as a gladiatorial arena, you know, basically what I was saying about the cage match. And that's responding to Musk's comment he's made several times at Twitter is the de facto public town square. Oh, my goodness. Can you imagine if Twitter, of all things, was our actual town square, our public town square in this country? What a mess. And maybe it is. And maybe that explains a lot of the mess. So anyway, I am going to step away from Twitter for a while and see how it goes. And also, thanks to our very own DJ Sheila B. from Sophisticated Boom Boom, Fridays from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern, a great show and a great DJ and a friend of mine who took the step, I think a couple of years ago now, of actually deleting her Twitter account, and I didn't take that step. So this is the first step toward possibly getting to that point at some point. Or maybe I'll keep it around for the odd announcement, but we'll see. Okay, shall we move on to Data Brokers? This is the main event for this evening's show. As I said before, this was precipitated, this show theme was precipitated by an episode of John Oliver's HBO show Last Week Tonight, which aired on April 10, just 8 days ago. And what happened was, a week ago, I was broadcasting the show, and a couple people asked on the message board or emailed me, "Hey, did you see the John Oliver piece?" And yes, I saw it. I watched it on Toxic YouTube, and I, in fact, have posted the link to the John Oliver episode for you to watch at your leisure, if you don't mind being tracked and surveilled by YouTube, by Google's YouTube, while you do it. But as I said before, it's an effective overview of Data Brokers, and I want to just share a little bit from that John Oliver show. I have two excerpts. They're both, one's a minute long and the other one's 2 minutes. So it's not much. And I took out some of the naughty words and some of the irrelevant jokes, irrelevant to us anyway, for what we're talking about. So let me start with just a minute from John Oliver. Again, this is from his April 10 show, and there's a link on the playlist at WFMU.org. Click playlists and comments, and you can see that, and you can watch it for yourself. But this is, let me turn this up. This is going to be John Oliver, just for a minute, giving a little overview about Data Brokers, just so we can set the stage here on WFMU Tectonic.
What all these companies have in common is they collect your personal information and then resell or share it with others. As one expert puts it, they're the middlemen of surveillance capitalism. But this isn't just about the convenience and or irritation of targeted ads. Data brokers operate in a sprawling, unregulated ecosystem which can get very creepy very fast.
The major US retailer OfficeMax knew not only that Mike Say's daughter was dead, but how she died.
It says Mike Say, daughter killed in car crash, or current business, and this is my home. Why would they have that kind of information? Why would they need that?
Right. And obviously, that is completely appalling, but I will say it is not that surprising to me. The truth is, when it comes to data brokers, they know significantly more about you than you might like, and do significantly more with it than you might think. So tonight, let's talk about the whole industry, and let's start with how your information is collected. Basically, every time you interact with society, you are leaving little breadcrumbs that can be gathered together and sold. And much of this happens online, thanks in large part to cookies.
Okay, so that's just 1 minute from early in the John Oliver show talking about data brokers, and I thought that was a good overview. He's stating that data brokers are capturing this stream of, as he says, breadcrumbs that you leave wherever you go, whenever you interact with society, by which he means interacting digitally with society, which many of our interactions are digital now, and they're many of them are fully surveilled, and he brings up the concept of a cookie. Most people, I think, in 2022 probably understand what a cookie is. They've been around since the birth of the web, almost in the late 1990s. It's just a little identifier that the idea was it would allow a website to identify you as having logged in. So it has your email and your password. And then when you come back a second time, maybe the next day, you would not have to type in your password again, because there's a little identifier on your web browser that said, that would say to the website, oh, hey, it's me, I'm coming back. And it was just a matter of convenience, which in the early days was really important, because if we all had to type our password into every single site, every time we tried to log in, every time we visited, that would have made the web prohibitively difficult in the early days, and it may not have had the uptake that it in fact enjoyed. Well, early on, the idea of a cookie for convenience, purely for, and I'm not saying this sarcastically, this was purely for the benefit of the user. Of course, the company benefited by having people visit more, but it was intended to make it easier for users to come back to sites. This is all to say that cookies were not evil originally. there was a good intent behind them originally, but then somewhere along the way, companies figured out, oh, wait a second, if we can identify someone when they come to our site, why don't we identify them when they go to other sites too? And the companies that really, really perfected this, the surveillance across the web, meaning tracking you not just on their site, but on every site you went to, the two companies that that pioneered this and perfected this are Google and Facebook. And if you want a little history of how this came to be, and how Google started it, and then Facebook quickly followed in Google's footsteps, read Shoshana Zuboff's book, The Age of Surveillance Capitalism. Zuboff has been on the show before. I'd like to get her back on the show at some point to do an update interview. But it really is an excellent book, and it talks about the birth of what she rightly calls surveillance capitalism. It all started with the cookies. Well, then there was so much value in what Facebook and Google were doing that there arose a whole, I would call it a cottage industry, but that implies that it's small somehow. A giant industry, I should say, of data brokers. A whole another probably misused word or overused word, but ecosystem. Ugh. But anyway, a whole ecosystem of companies, hundreds of them, that are buying and selling and trading the information that you leave as you travel across the web. And some of these are data brokers narrowly defined. There's a bunch of different categories of companies in that data sharing surveillance capitalist economy. For example, I don't think that Google and Facebook would technically be considered data brokers in the sense that, you know, we'll talk about some data brokers in a few minutes. We'll name a few in a few minutes. But there is a larger ecosystem of data broker type activity on top of which sit Facebook and Google, and now increasingly Amazon as well. So the three of the four big tech companies are primary actors in this data broker based surveillance economy: Facebook, Google, and Amazon. And I want to throw Apple in there as well. Now, Apple makes a big deal about, oh, we're all about privacy, and Tim Cook is always saying, don't look at our partnership with the Chinese Communist Party. Don't look at our suppliers in China that are reportedly using imprisoned Uyghur labor. No. Look at our privacy promise. Privacy, privacy, privacy. That's his mantra to take it to try to drive your attention away from the less pleasing aspects of what Apple is doing. Well, let's just look at that just for 1 minute. And I'm sorry for this digression, but I want to establish, friends, that the big tech companies are at the top of this ecosystem under which the data brokers that we're going to talk about in a few minutes are operating. So the kingpins, if you will, of this completely disgusting and unethical practice of surveillance capitalism, the kingpins are Facebook. Well, first of all, it's Google, then Facebook, then Amazon. And I'm going to throw Apple in there as well. And here's why. And Tim Cook would say, what? Not us, not Apple. Privacy, privacy, privacy. Well, Mr. Cook, may I remind you that your company, Apple, accepts an annual tribute of reportedly an estimated $10 to $15 billion a year from Google simply for allowing Google to be the default search engine on your iPhone. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine making $15 billion from the pioneer of unethical surveillance capitalism and accepting a check once a year, $15 billion, just for a menu item, for a default setting? Anyway, so Apple can say privacy all at once, but it takes $15 billion a year from the chief offender, which is Google. So Apple is very, very much complicit in this, as well as being complicit in many other horrific aspects of the tech industry. But Apple's in there as well. So Google, Facebook, Amazon, and Apple are the kingpins of this unethical, I would say borderline criminal industry as well. So let's now, having established the role of the big tech companies, let's move on to the data brokers. Okay, so let's play the second excerpt from John Oliver, where he dives in just a bit more into the activities of some of the data brokers that are presenting, well, you'll hear, presenting people's personal information on these websites. Here he is.
You might still think, I don't care about this. My life is an open book. I have no secrets. So data brokers can just have at it. Even if that is true for you, though, consider that there are others out there who might have very good reasons to not want to be found.
Donna is a domestic violence victim. We're protecting her identity. One of her addresses came up on a data broker site. She says that's frightening.
If you have someone that's tried to kill you, for them to be able to just type in your name in any known address that you've ever stayed in can pop up, it's scary because now they know ways to start trying to find you.
Right. And that's not just theoretical, it has happened. In New Hampshire, a stalker killed a former classmate after finding her with information that he bought from a data broker for $45. And if you have a stalker or you're a victim of... domestic violence, it is understandable to want your information removed from these people search sites. Unfortunately, each has its own specific and sometimes very complex process of requesting the removal of information. And there is no federal law requiring that they honour an opt-out request at all. And the lack of regulation here doesn't just benefit individuals who might mean you harm. It benefits the government too, because it gives them a very attractive loophole to the Fourth Amendment protection against unreasonable searches and seizures. Because under that, the government typically needs a warrant to collect information about you without your consent. But if it is not forcing someone to turn over your data, if it's simply buying it from a data broker, that is apparently fine, no warrant necessary. And you can see how valuable that would be to them. It happens all the time. In fact, federal agencies from the FBI to ICE have purchased data without warrants, public disclosures, or robust oversight to carry out everything from criminal investigations to deportations.
Okay, so that was John Oliver. Again, this is the April 10 episode of Last Week Tonight, his show on HBO, talking about some of the risks that are presented to people who maybe have had a stalker or maybe are vulnerable in different ways. And he goes through a number of different examples, not just around stalkers. You can watch the whole episode to get the details. I'm gonna tell you in 1 second how this connects to some specific data brokers. But first, I have to take a moment here to acknowledge it sounds like there are some glitches in the feed and in my broadcasting. Somebody asked on the playlist if this is recorded. No, this is not pre-recorded. This is live. This is live from Studio T. And what's happening, if you missed the beginning of the show, is that the radio station is in COVID lockdown, so a bunch of us are broadcasting from home. And so my live signal is coming from my home apartment here on the Upper West Side and going over the internet into Jersey City. And so if there are some glitches, I'm sure it is my very annoying internet connection here at home, because, you know, they haven't run reliable internet service into Manhattan. It's just such a far-flung place off in the boondocks. Who has ever... heard of internet access in Manhattan? They still haven't figured this out. Of course, I'm being sarcastic. The real problem is that there's no competition in the market. And for that, you can go back and listen to my interview on the book Fiber from a few months ago. You can go to WFMU.org and find that in the archives. So apologies if there are glitches or dropouts. I'm just going to keep going. See what I can message I can impart by the top of the hour. someone says that it sounds like it's at 1.25 speed. I really did not mean to speak. Maybe I should be speaking more slowly. So this is not pre-recorded. It's totally live. Okay, so now let's get to some specific data brokers. I have listed a few on the playlist at WFMU.org, and you can click playlist and comments to see a list. I've just listed 6 of them for you to take a look at. Now, we've heard from these excerpts from John Oliver that the data brokers are presenting your personal information, your family history, maybe your address. Where you live, and making it available at a very, very low price to any rando out there who might want to pick that up. You can try this yourself. So one of the data brokers that you can try is the site called Spokio. It's spoke like a bicycle spoke with the letter O at the end, spokeo.com. You can go to Spokio, type in your name and your location, and see what comes back. And if that doesn't creep you out, then you can try one more. Try PeopleSmart, peoplesmart.com. Do the same thing. Type your name, type your address or your location, and see what comes back. Not your address, your name and your city and state. See what comes back. One of those two, if you haven't already issued a takedown request from these sites, one or both of those should show you a surprising amount of personal information available to everybody on the public web without paying these sites anything. They can find out a lot about you, your age, where you live, and in some cases, who the names of some of your close relations are, and with links to them to get their ages and their locations. If you pay these sites just a little bit of money, like in that John Oliver excerpt, we heard that the domestic violence victim suffered a problem when her stalker paid a data broker, what was it, $40? It's less than $100. You can get a full dossier on anyone whose information is available. So Spokio.com, PeopleSmart.com. Try those two first. You can also go to FamilyTreeNow.com, MyLife.com, WhitePages.com, and Intellius.com. So with those, and there, by the way, there are dozens, but those are 6 to start with. And what you can do with each of those, if you don't want your information presented to randos on the public web, is you have to find where the takedown request is on each individual site. It's in a different place on every site. It's a different process for every site, and they don't make it easy. I've gone through this process myself for my own information, and I can tell you that if you go through the process, it's likely that the site will, within a few days, actually take down your data. How long that lasts, I don't know, but I was able to take down my own data from those 6 sites. It took 6 different processes. You have to read the fine print, and you should have get a little piece of paper where you write down your status of each of those 6 data brokers that you've done the takedown request for, so you can keep track of who's taken it down and who needs another nudge. A couple of them needed a second request, but they eventually did take those down. Now, of course, this is not a long-term solution to the problem of data brokers giving your personal data, your age, location, relationship, marital status, voting patterns, health. That's not a long-term solution. There are dozens of these out there. And if you took all the time it requires to do a takedown request of the several dozen data brokers out there, it's all you would do. That's all the time you have is to put in the takedown request for all these different sites. That's not sustainable for all of us. So this is what John Oliver finished his show by saying, is that we do in the U.S., we're going to need a congressional response. We need some sort of federal regulation. With some teeth behind it to protect our information. And until that shows up, all of our information is liable to be bought and sold by this giant economy of data brokers, putting vulnerable people at risk and putting you at risk if you don't, for some reason, want your own personal data available to anyone with $50. So the long-term solution is a collective response that is going to need congressional action. Friends, that's going to take a few years in the best case. And so in the meantime, the best thing I can offer is that stopgap of you going to those sites, finding the takedown request instructions, and putting in the request and checking the little box on your sheet of paper that has a list of data brokers. Now, I promised at the beginning of the show that I would say something that broadens this beyond just these six or a couple dozen data brokers in the surveillance economy, because this is not just a problem that is being extended and caused by these data brokers. Okio, PeopleSmart, and so on, all rolling up to Google, Facebook, and Amazon. Everyone, it seems, is getting in on the profits of surveillance capitalism. And I want to say something broader than what John Oliver had time to do in his 25 minutes. And I want to walk you through a few other examples of where surveillance capitalism is taking shape that affects you every day. And I wanted to start, since Friday was April 15, was tax day, tax filing deadline here in the U.S., and so timely to that, I wanted to bring up this first story that I put together for you. This is from the Washington Post on April 12th. They were getting in on the tax day thing as well. This is a story with Jeffrey. It's called "You Agree to What? Tax Sites Want Your Data for More Than a Filing." And what's happening here, and Jeffrey Fowler is writing about two companies in particular. One is H&R Block. I'm sure if you're based here in the U.S., you've heard of them, this chain of tax filing offices, retail storefronts, H&R Block. And the other is Intuit, which runs a software/platform called TurboTax, which is I would imagine by far the most popular way to file taxes online is this software called TurboTax. And as it turns out, both TurboTax and H&R Block are beginning to get into this game of buying and trading your personal data. Because think about it, your personal data is valuable in this surveillance capitalist marketplace that Google and Facebook pioneered and that data brokers are now filling out. And TurboTax and H&R Block have a lot of really interesting data based on your tax returns, your W-2s, your income, charitable donations go. Of course, they have your SSN, they have your home address, they have your number of dependents. There's a lot of your personal information in your tax returns, and that spells a lot of cash for these companies. So, Fowler writes about, quote, "a little discussed evolution of the tax prep software industry from mere processors of returns to profiteers of personal data." And then here is a great punchline. "It's the Facebookization of personal finance." That's just a wonderful phrase, isn't it? Next time you speak to a friend who's an executive at Intuit working on TurboTax, or an executive at H&R Block making those decisions that affect the business on a strategic level, you can ask them, how does it feel to be working on the Facebookization of personal finance? What a wonderful way to spend your career as a senior leader. And you can tell them, I'm simply quoting the Washington Post. This is not my own words. This is from Jeff Fowler at the Post. So I don't know what to tell you. This is, if we have takedown requests for... half a dozen data brokers, however many you want to stomach, then you got to think, well, when I file my taxes, I may have put in all the takedown requests for Spokio and PeopleSmart and all the rest, but if I file my taxes on TurboTax, what's happening to my data? And there are representatives of those companies quoted in the Washington Post piece, and they say, oh, no, don't worry. We're fully transparent, and we give customers a way to opt out. And you can read the story to see how they word the opt out to make it, oh, maybe not as clear as it could be, or maybe not as easy as it could be for people actually to opt out. Intuit does not want you to opt out of their surveillance capitalist profits. They really do want you to allow them to share your data for their own profit. To any third parties that they want. So that's tax filing. Let's move on. Let's go to news sites. Now, news sites, this is another industry that makes a lot of money, and it's advertising. It's both advertising and subscription focused based, but increasingly surveillance capitalist. Tracking is part of their profit model, and these are news sites like the Washington Post, the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Time.com, USA Today, and the list goes on and on. There's a guy named Bill Fitzgerald who put together his own study. He did his own research to see just how many trackers are installed on these various sites. So, for example, when you go to the Wall Street Journal and read an article there, your browser, according to Bill Fitzgerald, your browser, when you visit the Wall Street Journal site, your browser gets saddled with over 200 trackers, over 200 trackers on the Wall Street Journal. And I'm not saying this just to pick on the Wall Street Journal or a right-leaning publication. It's right-leaning, it's left-leaning, it's newspapers, it's magazines, it's conservative, it's progressive. As I've said many times on the show, this problem is not about left versus right, not at all. It's about big tech and their surveillance capitalist economy versus the rest of us who they are exploiting for profit. That's what this is about. And you can read that piece. Again, it's on the playlist at WFMU.org. Click playlist and comments. And it's called Who Tracks You When You Read the News? So part of the problem is the news sites themselves that, as I said, have made tracking you part of their profit model. Another problem is the profusion of data brokers, or I don't know if they're technically considered data brokers or they're middlemen of some sort, but as I said, hundreds of companies in this ecosystem. And just as an example, Bill Fitzgerald brings up one that I had never heard of. You've probably never heard of. It's a company called Beeswax. You ever heard of Beeswax? Fitzgerald writes, Beeswax is used on 24 of the 30 sites in this scan. Okay, so this is a very popular company in the surveillance capitalist space. And it says, Fitzgerald writes, to summarize, Beeswax, this company we've never heard of, can collect your precise location. So if you're reading the Washington Post or the Wall Street Journal while sitting at your kitchen table, Beeswax's privacy policy appears to specify that they can collect and store that information. With that location in hand, Beeswax's privacy policy states that they can get more data from unnamed third-party companies about you. So this is a surveillance capitalist problem that is rife in the news industry, throughout the news industry, run by companies that you've never heard of that are tracking you, in some cases, in the hundreds when you read an article. So there, it's not simply Google, Facebook, and Amazon, and Spokio and PeopleSmart. There's hundreds more, whether you are filing your taxes or simply reading the news. Okay, let's go to another one. Amazon employees. Amazon employees, as Amazon has increased its investment in surveillance capitalism and surveillance of its customers for its business, employees themselves inside Amazon have access to your data. Here's an article from Wired Magazine from November 18, last year, 2021. The headline is Amazon's Dark Secret. It has failed to protect your data. And this is, here's what Wired says. From the Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and Wired, Amazon's vast empire of customer data, its metastasizing record of what you search for, what you buy, what shows you watch, what pills you take, what you say to Alexa, who's at your front door. They're talking about this awful Amazon Ring doorbell that Amazon sells. All of that data had become so sprawling, fragmented, and promiscuously shared within the company that the Amazon's own security division can't even map all of it, much less adequately defend it. So here's the problem. Amazon is collecting your data in so many different ways, from devices, from websites, and across the web. They don't even know how to defend that data from their own internal employees making illegal use of that data. Here's how the Wired magazine article puts it. Across Amazon, some low-level employees were using their data privileges to snoop on the purchases of celebrities, while others were taking bribes to help shady sellers sabotage competitors' businesses. Doctor Amazon's review system and sell knockoff products to unsuspecting customers. So here we have another threat to us is not simply the ecosystem of hundreds of companies that are profiting from this. It's when there's so much data inside one company like Amazon, there can be individuals, malicious individuals inside the company who are using that data for their own ends. As the Wired magazine article puts it, snooping on purchases of celebrities and even taking bribes to help sellers. And finally, we've got one more problem from the New Yorker that's in the current issue or the upcoming issue. This is an article by Ronan Farrow, Mia Farrow's son, who has written an article called How Democracies Spy on Their Citizens. And this one takes a little bit of explaining, and I don't know how much of this is getting through. Because it sounds like there may be a bitrate problem with my live stream. I'm not sure. But we will certainly get this addressed before next week's show. So sorry for the clickiness and the glitchiness. I hope some of this is coming through. But as much as this might be understandable by everybody out there, there is one final threat to us in this data broker-led economy. And it's ironic because what John Oliver said in his HBO show last week tonight, as I said earlier, is that we cannot simply make a solution out of going to individual data brokers and asking them nicely to remove our information. The issue is something that is going to require a collective response from Congress. It's going to require federal legislation. And I'm just getting a lot of messages about the bitrate. Sorry. This is just under the wire. I don't know if... Let me just... Let me check something. Let me see if I can... if this will make any difference if I am... I'm checking my bitrate right now, and... Yes, the bitrate is set just the way it is supposed to. So it's probably my really annoying internet connection. Anyway, sorry about that. The federal response is going to have... The federal response that John Oliver talked about is going to have to come from the government. And the irony is there is a major story in The New Yorker by Ronan Farrow that talks about how governments themselves are getting in on the surveillance capitalist economy by surveilling their own citizens. Now, one of the threats right now is a specific piece of software called Pegasus. Let me read you what Farrow writes in The New Yorker. Pegasus, a spyware technology designed by NSO Group, an Israeli firm, which can extract the contents of a phone, giving access to its texts and photographs, or activate its camera and microphone to provide real-time surveillance, exposing, say, confidential meetings. And Farrow continues, there is evidence that Pegasus, the spyware software, Pegasus is being used in at least 45 countries, and it and similar tools have been purchased by law enforcement agencies in the United States and across Europe. And here's the punchline that I wanted to lead to in this show, which is that the problem of data brokers is much bigger than data brokers. I'm really glad that John Oliver covered data brokers in his Last Week Tonight show, and I would recommend listening to that. But the data brokers are just one piece of a much larger problem that we're facing, in that we are building a global surveillance state that even the governments around the world are beginning to feed off of. And when the governments themselves begin to derive a great benefit from a surveillance state, they have less and less motivation to mount a federal response to do something about it. And that's when it gets very, very dangerous. So here's an example for you. Pegasus, as I said, is a spyware. It comes from this Israeli company called NSO Group. And Pegasus, I've covered it a couple of times on the show. It first got some notoriety when I believe the Saudi regime was using it to spy on journalists and activists. And people said, oh, that's just terrible, terrible that an authoritarian government would use this Pegasus spyware. I'm shocked. I'm horrified. Well, it turns out that there are non-authoritarian governments that are beginning to use Pegasus because they derive a benefit. What Pegasus can do is it can directly surveil any iPhone. So if someone out there really wants to listen into your conversations, read your emails, see your photos, track your location, and do everything else, one way to get some of that is to pay a data broker $50, and they'll get your location and a lot of the other data we talked about earlier. But if they really want to get inside your phone and have a direct connection to everything your phone is processing for you, your voice, your, like I said, your emails, your social media, your photos, everything else, they simply have to get access to Pegasus. Identify your phone via Pegasus and they're in. Now, Apple, of course, has said, oh, no, this is terrible. We're going to have a patch. We're going to do something about what Pegasus is doing. I wouldn't count on it. NSO Group really knows what they're doing. And as Ronan Farrow points out, there are governments and law enforcement agencies around the world that are banging down their door to get access to Pegasus to then get access to your phone. What happens, friends, when the governments that we live under decide that the benefits of Pegasus and associated spyware, there's more on the way, the benefits of this spyware and the benefits of the surveillance state outweigh any downside of a fully surveilled citizenry. That's the problem that we're facing. Data brokers are just a canary in the coal mine. If you go onto the playlist at WFMU.org, click playlists and comments, and click into any of these data brokers, Spokio, PeopleSmart, FamilyTreeNow, MyLife, White Pages, Intellius, there's more. Type in your name and your location. See what can come back for free on a public website. Imagine what a stalker or anybody who has a grudge against you, imagine what they could get for $50. And now multiply that by 1,000, and that's what someone, a law enforcement agency or a government with access to Pegasus, could get on you should the need arise, should they have a desire for any reason. Do we really want to organize our society in this way, where everyone is carrying around a surveillance device that benefits the government to have access to fully surveil, unknown to the user, by the way, unknown to the citizen, without their knowledge or consent at any time, fully surveilled? What does that do for dissent, political dissent in countries? And I don't just mean authoritarian states. This country right here, what does it mean for dissent? What does it mean for vulnerable populations, for religious minorities, for example? What does it mean for vulnerable individuals who, as John Oliver pointed out, may have a stalker, may have suffered from domestic violence? What is it? What kind of a society are we building when carrying around a surveillance device known as an iPhone or an Android device is essentially required to function in a professional manner in society? It's very difficult for a lot of people to imagine a world when they are able to put the iPhone down, put the Android down, and walk around with a flip phone. A few people do, but a lot of people can't because they're required to have the surveillance device on them at all times. I hope that you will click through some of the data brokers and click through some of the links on the playlist to understand the broad range of this problem that we're facing. I'm trying to take what John Oliver did and broaden it to what I think is the full shape of this. It is the surveillance state, and it's coming for all of us. And mounting an individual response of, you know, hurling your iPhone into the Hudson River, metaphorically, is one thing we can do. Taking any surveillance devices, Alexa devices, to the e-waste facility, that's another thing you can do. Contacting these data brokers and finding their hidden little instructions for removing your information, your family members' information, that's something we can do. That's great. But that's not a solution. That's a stopgap. We need something bigger. We need a collective response to put these data brokers out of business. And if I had a magic wand, I would put the entire surveillance capitalist economy out of business. I would replace it with something that was more humane and more civil and more democratic than something where citizens are walking around being surveilled for profit, exploited for profit without their knowledge or consent. And yes, that would probably mean shutting down Facebook. And much of Google's profits would disappear. And certainly, $15 billion from Apple's bottom line would go up in a puff of smoke. And what a better world that would be, honestly. Amazon would be in a heap of trouble as well. Why don't we start there? Why don't we figure out how to mount a better top-down response, a collective response that addresses the issue at its root, which is the toxic business models of these big tech companies and their vassal ecosystem. That's about all the time we have for this evening on data brokers. Again, sorry for the transmission issues. I suspect it was my own home internet that was a problem. What I might do if I still have this issue, I may pre-record next week's show. We'll see. But I will address this problem for next week. Thanks for sticking with me. And friends, you have been listening to the greatest radio station in the world, WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in New York City and Rockland County at 91.9 FM and online at WFMU.org. Until next time, friends, you know exactly what to do. Avoid Amazon and Apple. Forget Facebook and whatever you do. Get off Google. I want you to stay tuned for another great episode of The Arbitrarium with DJ Arb. And I want to thank DJ Sue Braun for turning me on to this final outro song. It's called Compliance by the band Muse. Have a great week, everybody.
Compliance. We just need your compliance.
The Arbitrarium is your weekly soundtrack to the destruction of the last vestigial traces of traditional manhood in the race in order to realign the sexes, thus reducing population while increasing human happiness and preparing humanity for its next stage.
I never saw the need for them myself. A little contact, or anything that even sounded like contact, would give me more speed than I could bear. Whenever I heard something outside of our clenched little circle, I'd practically flip. Hoping to God that I wasn't the only one who'd noticed it. A couple of rounds fired off in the dark a kilometer away, and the elephant would be there, kneeling on my chest, sending me down into my boots for a breath. Once, I thought I saw a light moving in the jungle, and I caught myself just under a whisper saying, I'm not ready for this. I'm not ready for this.
That's when I decided to drop it and do something else with my nights.
Ô toi, le plus savant et le plus beau des anges, tu trahis par le sort et privé de louanges. Ô Satan, prends pitié de ma longue misère. Ô prince de l'exil, à qui l'on a fait tort, et qui vaincu toujours te redresse plus forte. Ô Satan, prends pitié de ma longue misère. Toi, qui sais tout, roi roi des choses terrènes, guérisseur et familière des angoisses humaines, ô Satan, prends pitié de ma longue misère. Toi qui, même au loutre, au pari à maudit, enseigné pour l'amour à le goût du paradis. Ô Satan, prends pitié de ma longue misère. Ô Satan, prends pitié de ma longue misère. Ô Satan, prends pitié de ma longue misère. Ô Satan, prends pitié de ma longue misère.
Ô toi, le plus savant et le plus beau des anges, tu trahis pour la force et privé de louanges, Satan.
Say, I am a dry tree, for thus saith the Lord to the eunuchs, I will give them an everlasting name, which shall never perish. Oh, but he who hath wrought wickedness hath done wrong. He shall have both testicles removed. This is the law of the land. Still, I give you an everlasting name. He who speaketh falsely against God, as thou hast spoken, shall succumb unto a penectomy. It is written. Still, I give you an everlasting name. Transgresses against the laws of man, invents the path of his own destruction. Still, I give you an everlasting name. Verily, I saith unto thee, I have trespassed, I have dealt treacherously. I have robbed, I have spoken slander, I have acted perversely, and I have wrought wickedness. I have been presumptuous, I have done violence. I have framed lies. I have counseled evil. And I have spoken falsely. I have scoffed. I have revolted. I have provoked. I have rebelled. I have committed iniquity. And I have transgressed. I have oppressed. I have been obstinate. I have done wickedly. I have corrupted. I have committed abomination. I have gone astray. And I have led others astray. I have oppressed. I have been obstinate. I have done wickedly. I have corrupted. I have committed abomination. I have gone astray. And I have led others astray. And I have led others astray. And I have led others astray. I have dealt treacherously. I have robbed. I have spoken slander. I have acted perversely. And I have wrought wickedness. I have been presumptuous. I have done violence. I have framed lies. I have counseled evil. And I have spoken falsely. I have scoffed. I have revolted. I have provoked. I have rebelled.